Come on around back, Arizona homeowners. Let's move off the coffee table and away from the couch and get out in the yard and get our hands dirty. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House. If you have a question, in particular this week, second Saturday of the month, a tree question, John Eisenhower, certified ISA arborist, is here in studio ready to take your calls at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You can text questions into 411-923 or email tree insect identification help to 411-923. That number is available during the broadcast only. I'm Romy. Rosie's right here. Jennifer's behind the board ready to take your calls. And Mike, Gary D's making all the magic on the board. It's a beautiful day, Mr. Eisenhower.
It
is. Kind of hard to come inside. The smells and the overcast and the desert aroma. Like, man.
I never thought I'd hear myself saying hallelujah for anything under 100 degrees, you know?
You know, John, it's like in March and April and May, 90 seems so hot. But boy, long about September, October, boy, that 90 feels pretty good, doesn't it?
It does. And it feels good.
It's almost chilly out here.
I know. We were saying that the other morning. I almost feel a little chill in there, don't you?
Yes, yes.
I know. Well, the trees love it, too. When it gets below 100 degrees, it's a real relief to the plants. Because especially with a summer like we had with those 110-degree temperatures in June that persisted for like 3 weeks, and then another several periods of 110 degrees through the entire summer, a lot of plants that would normally make it through a regular hot summer just were really flagging. We finally lost a plant that we've kind of nursed through the summer in our yard. It was a new planted tree that I put in the spring. And it just, you know, I probably should have built a shade structure over it, but I thought, well, no, I'm just going to keep on watering it and care for it. Well, it finally just packed it up a few weeks ago. And we had to be out of town a few long weekends, and I couldn't be there to baby it.
That can make the difference.
But it would have made it.
That can make the difference.
But it would have made it, I think, if it had just been a normal hot summer. But this is one of those summers that will go down on record. June was the third hottest June on record that we've had. When it starts that early, and then you have this persistent 110-degree temperatures all the way through July and August, all the way almost into September, it's tough on plants.
And us, too.
Yeah. No, a beautiful day, a little overcast today. It's really nice.
Hey, did you happen to take advantage or get out in the yard? You have a beautiful backyard. Did you get out there in this full moon series this past week and watch the lightning demonstrations on the rising moon?
No, I didn't see it on the rising moon, but Kim and I were out on the pool deck the other night watching that big storm that came the night before last. It was really nice.
Some spectacular lightning demonstrations this week. We had a red full moon coming up. I think that was Tuesday night.
Lightning
over at Usury Pass and over Fountain Hills and the McDowells. Lightning was just framing the rising full moon.
Wow.
It was spectacular.
Wow. I hope some photographers locally got a few shots of that. I bet those would be nice.
Romy's looking for some local photo shots.
You know, Rosie's 30th anniversary is coming up next year, and we have this home maintenance calendar we're putting together that people can put in their homes, and each month here's your to-dos to keep up with and just things that we forget about and they fall behind us. So it's just a way to help everyone keep on track of
home maintenance projects.
Like, yeah. The endless reoccurring home maintenance projects. But we wanted to have a lot of fun with it too. We've got a section of it dedicated to a little bit of Arizona history each month, and we've got a section designated for pictures from around the state. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to open that up to our listeners? So if you've got it has to be a picture you personally have taken of a great Arizona landscape or wildlife, email it to info@rosieonthehouse.com. You have between now and the end of the month to submit it. Then listeners will be able to vote for 2 weeks beginning October on which pictures will be selected for the calendar. So
tree pictures too?
That's a landscape. That's, you know, that's part of us.
There's the monument tree, right? And then the heritage tree, right?
Champion tree is the biggest tree of its species known on current record in the state. Heritage tree is one that was old enough is old, back to prior to statehood, which would have been, you know, 1912.
It was in existence before statehood. Wow, that's pretty cool.
So if you've got a plant or landscape, wildlife, Arizona picture you think is good enough to be voted on and selected for the first ever 30th anniversary Rosie on the House home maintenance calendar, email it in. And the listeners will get to vote. We're not voting.
And I'm with John. If you got a picture of that lightning show with the rising full moon the other day,
that's got to be a winner.
I'll make sure that wins.
That'll get onto the Rosie Facebook page.
I don't think we're going to have to make sure it wins. That's just going to naturally.
It was absolutely gorgeous. John, let's get back up in the trees here.
Yeah, for September, just because the temperatures start to drop, there's a few things just to keep in mind. That it's a great time to resume a little bit more pruning on your trees. You don't want to be stripping off their winter coat just before the cold weather. But if they're getting a little heavy, some of your more vigorous tree varieties, you can start doing a little bit of pruning now. Better than in October, November, December. That's a little too close to the cold weather. But now's a good time to do that last fall pruning just to get your trees ready for the holidays. Make sure the yard is looking a little more tidy as you turn the corner into the holiday season. Also, planting and transplanting is a great, great time to do that as well. Again, because the daytime temperatures are dropping, but the soil temperatures are still warm enough to sustain a new plant. Great time to put some plants in the ground. And finally, and more, real importantly, we've mentioned this many times, this is a time to do your annual fertilizing. Many people fertilize periodically through the year, which is great. They take an annual dosage of fertilizer and then break it into three or four treatments throughout the season, like many of our citrus customers do that. But if you only fertilize one time a year, I'd recommend that you fertilize in the fall. The research has indicated that it's really the best time because the trees utilize those stored nutrients for their spring push of growth. Even though trees start slowing down growing above ground during the winter, especially our deciduous trees, the roots remain active in the soil, incredibly active, right through the winter season. Because the soil temperatures are moderated, the root activity can continue despite the fact that it's cold above ground. So a good time to put the fertilizer in the soil now. The trees utilize it, they store those nutrients, and then they're ready for they hit the road running, so to speak, in the spring.
And it seems like you're talking about the root growth in the winter and it's developing. Seems like I heard somebody say something one time. It was kind of catchy and clever. As go the roots, so go the shoots.
Hey, well, good memory.
So all winter long, those roots are developing, which means spring and summer comes, and here comes the shoots, the tree growth.
There you go. Yeah, what happens below ground dictates what's going to happen above ground. And if we treat the soil, we'll talk a little bit about that today. If you treat the soil well and get a nice growing environment, that's so critical. If it's neglected, or if you don't have adequate space for a growing tree, eventually you'll have problems above ground. And a lot of times when we have symptoms that are presenting above ground, usually those are the things we can see. We often don't correlate it to what's going on below ground. But that's our real key to healthy trees is making sure that we're attending to that root system, making sure it's a good growing environment. We'll talk a little bit today about fertilizing and how that helps and how we go about it. There's really the ISA, the tree industries that we associate with the trade industries, and also the ANSI standards dictate that we should do prescriptive fertilization. And we'll talk a little bit about why that's important. And we'll also talk a little bit about composting, a key part of an overall plant healthcare program. And it's really awesome in the fall because now we've got all our leaves are going to start to drop off our deciduous trees. And it's a great time to be raking those leaves and creating a compost pile. And if you don't want to create your own compost, at least think about buying some finished compost from a local nursery and beginning to put that around your trees as well. In addition to the benefits of fertilizer, compost is an amazing contribution to the landscape. And today we'll talk a little bit about that as well.
And do we have a tree this month?
We do. It's one of my favorite trees. I have so many favorite trees. There's an unlimited list.
He says that every
month. That's why I said you should talk about one every month.
I'm glad we have one every month so I can have 12 of my favorites. You know, the one we want to talk about today is a carob tree. And it's a very awesome green, evergreen tree. Beautiful, dark green, waxy leaf, dark brown bark. But it puts on this fruit from which we can get carob powder. Many of you have seen carob powder in health food stores. You can actually process these if you have a carob tree. You can process the fruit very, very easily, and it's they're wonderful. We eat them on the job site. When they drop on the ground, they're a large pod, sometimes up to 6 inches in length, about an inch or so wide, and they're just a caramel, buttery flavor. They're just amazing, just a very wonderful natural sweetener. And no, I love carobs because they do give you a little return on your investment, just like all of the fruit trees that we plant.
So that's not one you hear a lot talked about. Is that a rare one to find? You have to really go search for it at nurseries, or will every nursery have it? It's just one that is overlooked regularly.
No, I think they're available. They may not be as common as some of the ones around. That's why we like to mention some of these, because I think they are underused in the landscape. You'll see all your kind of top 5 or 10 trees that the nurseries are recommending. But the carob tree is one of those. It's a little more slow growing, which is probably why a lot of the nurseries don't plant them, because they take a little longer to achieve their landscape purpose. And usually customers and installers are looking for that plant that's going to be, or a tree that's going to achieve its landscape purpose quickly, and they'll have instant shade. Carob trees are a little slower growing.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Join the conversation.
I could be.
Thank you for spending your beautiful Arizona Saturday morning with us, Rosie on the House, talking trees this Saturday morning with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. And we have off air kind of dived into this tree of the month a little bit deeper. Rosie kind of. Not often does he get motivation to look into and do research as it relates to plant material. He's going to town here.
Yeah, you know, one of the common names for the carob tree is a locust tree or St. John's bread. And there's some who believe that this tree was actually one of the food sources for St. John the Baptist. The Bible says that he would eat locust and honey was his primary diet. And this word locust, as translated in the Greek, might have been this fruit from this tree, because they were, you know, from that part of the world. And it would make sense to me that he would have been eating these, because they're, like I said, really a wonderful source of sweet powder. I wanted to mention too that we don't talk much about carob trees, and maybe they're less common than some of the top 10 we'd see in the nurseries, but there's a real benefit for slow growing trees. Maybe it's because I'm getting a little older and I've seen what fast growing trees can do. Fast growing trees are going to be higher litter. They're going to be more prone to breakage. They're putting on wood faster, so the wood is weaker. Slow-growing trees, like your oak trees, like this carob tree, they achieve their landscape purpose a little more slowly. You know, instead of achieving the height that you might want in 10 years or 5 years, they might take 7 or 8, 10 years. But once they get there, they're going to be a stronger tree structurally. The wood's going to be put on more slowly, so the grain is finer. They're just a stronger tree overall. And I just would encourage people to consider that when you're putting in your new trees, that you don't want to just put in the tree of the month that the nursery's promoting, because sometimes those are the fast-growing trees that end up becoming a maintenance headache, a lot of litter, and potential for breakage as they grow so quickly and get so tall. So be thinking about this in terms of one of those. If you got this spot for – this is a pretty large tree. They can get up to 35, 40 feet tall. But it's just not going to get there quite as fast as the others. The old saying goes, when is the best time to plant a tree? It was 20 years ago. What's the second best time? Today. So if you are thinking about putting some trees in, get them into the ground. My wife and I took some time and planted about 20 fruit trees in our backyard about probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And it's wonderful. You know, we have apricots and peaches and pears and just a bunch of apples. It's just amazing. Now, we're so glad we took the time to do that.
Of those 20, did you have 100% success rate?
No, we lost our nectarine. It didn't make it. We babied that. I'm not sure what the problem was with it. Maybe it was just the poor quality nursery stock. But we gave it the same treatment the other ones had. Our dog did bite a bunch of them down. I think I mentioned that in the past. We had a little puppy that was teething, and he bit them all off at about 18 inches off the ground and walked out there one day, and, oh, my goodness. Well, those trees became the best trees in the orchard because the branches sprouted from just below where he had bit them off into a nice candelabra of wonderful branches that are now at a beautiful harvestable height. Now, those trees are only about 8 or 10 feet tall. We can reach up and get the apples out of them now. And so I learned a really valuable lesson. Our dog actually pruned our trees for the first time. And they've been the best trees.
And luckily enough, it was above the graft line, so it wasn't like you're getting the rootstock sprouted.
Sure, and in fact, Greg Peterson, when he sold us those trees, told us, hey, you need to cut them off real low to the ground. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I thought, this is such a beautiful tree, and it's 6 or 7 feet tall. Well, those trees I let grow from that full height, now the branches are all 12 and 15 feet off the ground, and to harvest my peaches, I have to be on a ladder. So, you know, Greg's wisdom was my dog heard the advice, but I didn't. And those couple of trees he chewed off are some of our best.
Romy, I can't believe you haven't put a carob at your house. It's a single-sex tree, mm-hmm. So you need a daddy and a mommy.
Right.
A daddy can fertilize 20 mommies. It's an excellent fire barrier because it doesn't burn very well. It produces a chocolate-tasting syrup whose sugar content can be 50%. A 25-year-old tree can produce 250 pounds of beans. It can be eaten fresh or roasted or ground to a powder. The tree uses include animal fodder for sheep, goats, donkeys, bee forage, windbreaks, shade.
It's amazing. So good.
I think if you read this tree's resume, you'd buy a couple. This is an incredible tree, John.
They are. And many use the carob powder as a replacement for cocoa powder in recipes. And you'll see it sold in health food stores. And
well, I got a little strip of grove we've yet to plant. And it was going to be more annas to feed the livestock. But,
you could put several of them in maybe on 4 or 5 foot centers.
In the Mediterranean, they use this to treat diarrhea.
Well, now I gotta have two or three of those. All right, when we get back, we'll start with Gary, who wants to talk pecan trees.
Trunks, branches, leaves. Branches, leaves. Buds and fruits and flowers in the breeze.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Gary starts us off this segment from Scottsdale and wants to talk pecan trees. Good morning, sir.
Happy Saturday morning. I'm out here in the backyard actually digging, moving some soil. And one of the things I'm doing is digging a hole for a shade tree. We've got a two-story house, and really the bulk of the two-storiness is on the western exposure. So I want to plant a shade tree or two. I've got only about 25 feet or so between the edge of my house and my 6-foot block wall. And like I said, it's two stories. So I'm looking for a kind of a vertical growth habit. Maybe so that's the width of the space. And then lengthwise, it's probably 40 feet, the other direction. So maybe mm-hmm. two trees in there. I've got some other plants. As a hobby, I grow some fruit trees and vegetables and whatnot like that. So I'm thinking pecan tree, John. So I'd like to get your take on that. I'm not absolutely married to the notion of that tree or having a fruit or nut tree in there for that space. I could be talked out of it if there's something that, on the benefits of shade and shape and things like that, you think is a better choice. But I'd like to get your take on the pecan tree. And then if a pecan tree, I hear people lose a lot of them. Is there anything particular, like a, it's got like a tap root or something like that? So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, pecans are awesome when they're established and growing in your yard. They can have some problems this time of year with aphids dropping some honeydew in your yard. But they're awesome trees once they get established, but they're thirsty. They require water. And sometimes people don't realize that they're not going to be able to just get by on a typical watering schedule. Or you just have to be sure you water to the full depth of the root zone, the root ball, every time you water. And then as the tree, of course, gets larger, you need to continue meeting that need for the increased size of the root system. Yes, they do develop a taproot, and in good, well-flocculated, well-drained soil in an orchard setting, they're going to have the ability to put down a root quite deeply. Unfortunately, in our some of our urban landscapes, in a yard like yours, you may not have that type of soil structure and texture that would support a tree like a pecan. So keep that in mind, that you need to have a pretty well-drained soil that's going to allow those roots to go deep. Again, containerized trees may not even have a well-developed root tap root, or the I'm not sure I would buy anything other than a field-grown pecan tree. You'd have to kind of try to source one that has a rather than buy a smaller tree that may not have been grown with allowing for that taproot development. But no, it's a great tree. Pecans grow taller than they grow wide. So for a two-story application like you're looking for, it's a good choice from that standpoint. And that 40-foot length of space would probably allow for two to be planted quite safely. Also, I'd try to split the distance between your house and the block wall. That 25 feet, I'd try to put the tree right in the middle. Whatever you decide to plant, you want to give it as much rooting space as you can without those roots hitting the block wall and possibly breaking up the wall over time. So, yeah, give those roots as much space as you can.
Gotcha. Are there varieties of pecan trees that I'm
You know, that's not my area of expertise. You know, I would contact your local nursery and call John Harper and Jay Harper and see. He could certainly steer you in the right direction.
Okay, absolutely. I know you guys were going to talk about compost. When you get there, I've looked on a couple of Facebook groups, and there's seems like a raging controversy about the depth of compost and the mulch around a tree. There's one camp that's like 6 inches or less, and the other camp is a foot or more. And I know there's some talk about the amount of oxygen they get, et cetera, et cetera. So when you get there and have that conversation, touch on that, would you?
I will. I appreciate
All right.
the call.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. Take care.
Greg, we appreciate the call. I do have a couple additional points for you. We had a specialist in, oh, gosh, I'm going to say this has been 3 or 4 years ago. Pecan trees need 10 gallons a day per year of their life. So by the time that tree's 10 years old, it needs 100 gallons a day. Now, you don't water it every day because you still need to let the roots dry out. So if you're watering once a week at 10 years, that needs 1,000 gallons when you go to water it. So that's a very robust, thirsty tree. And you were talking about people losing them. It's because they don't realize the amount of water it takes. But
where we've seen the pecans do the best in my 30 years in the industry has been in irrigated lots or in orchard settings. Mm-hmm. There's several pecan orchards in the East Valley that were sold to developers, and they've built in and around those established pecan trees. But wherever I see a really mature pecan in town, it's usually in some of those areas where you have irrigation.
L.E. Cook out of California is one of the premier grafters that are used here in Arizona, and their variety that works best is the Western Shelly pecan. And you can get those at specialty local nurseries. Usually at graft time, early spring. So if you're looking for a pecan, there's a little bit.
Yeah, the different varieties will have different characteristics, the shell thickness on the pecan itself, the size of the pecans, and Ask your local grower to steer you in the right direction from that standpoint. But yeah, a well-established pecan is such a blessing to have those pecans dropping on the ground about this time of year. And we have some friends of ours, Steve Preeb and Donna DeFrancesco, have a wonderful couple of big pecan trees in their yard, and they treated us to some of their harvest a few years ago. And they had several 5-gallon buckets of those pecans in their garage, and it's really nice to have.
You know, they took, when they built their home, leaves from that pecan tree and embedded them into the countertop using a process called
flat tooling. I remember that. You're right.
They've
got a couple of those leaves embedded in that concrete countertop. Getting to the question of compost, can we talk about that now?
Let's get to compost.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I highly recommend putting down as little compost as you can around the trees, for various reasons. One, if the compost is too thick, it can cap the oxygen to the soil. The oxygen, as we talked about in prior years, the soil needs oxygen, and the roots require oxygen for cell metabolism to take place. So putting in any kind of soil, even if it's a compost, above the native soil prevents oxygen from getting down into the root system, and for the roots also to be releasing carbon dioxide and methane gas through the that gas exchange has to take place, and you don't want to be capping that by putting too much soil above the native soil. We also don't want the compost to be up against the trunk of the trees, because it can wick the moisture up against the trunk of the trees and set up conditions for fungal pathogens to start attacking the trunk tissue. So we recommend, 2 inches, maybe 3 inches of a finished compost, never more than that. If it's a very fine textured compost, even 1 or 2 inches, maybe all you'd want. If you have a very heavy textured compost with big chunks in it, and we call that more flocculated and broken up, so oxygen is can penetrate through it more easily. Of course, you can put a thicker layer in. You can put 4 to 6 inches in. But there's a big problem with mulch being pushed up against the trunks of trees. We call them mulch volcanoes. We don't see it so much here out in the West, but it's very common in the Midwest and the East, where a lot of mulch is pushed up right up against the trunk. It's caused more trouble with trees. Root activity moves up into those areas. As I said, fungal pathogens get active because that mulch wicks the moisture up against the trunk like a contact explosive, and it just destroys the trunk of the tree. And once that happens, the trees will decline. So keep the mulch away from the base of the trees, and only as much as you need to provide a nice, 2 or 3 inch cushion. The benefits of compost are amazing. It encourages some nitrogen cycling. If we've taken all the leaf litter away, of course, as the compost is breaking down, it's releasing nutrients back into the soil, vitamins back into the soil. That in turn improves the soil microbiology. It also insulates the soil. It moderates the temperature of the soil. In the summer, it keeps it cooler. In the winter, it keeps it warmer. So it really provides a wonderful blanket, so to speak, over the soil, giving the rooting environment the optimum conditions for that root development. It also reduces water loss. So whatever your irrigation we're putting to the plants, that layer of mulch is going to hold it in the soil longer and won't lose it to evaporation. Also, compost controls dust. It controls weeds. Finally, it cures the common cold. It does just about everything. We love compost. I think in some ways it's better than throwing a bunch of chemicals at our trees. Fertilizer is essentially chemicals. And whether they're synthetic, whether they're organic, it's still putting chemicals into the soil. Most of those are salt-based. Well, when you put a nice compost, a nice sweet finished compost over the soil, you're encouraging that nitrogen cycling very organically and naturally. And it helps to minimize the need to put down as much fertilizer. So compost is wonderful, whether you make your own or whether you go purchase it. And there are several good sources. Western Organics is a great source And also Sing Farms out in the East Scottsdale area have some really good quality compost. So you can go buy it in bulk, go bring a pickup truck and grab some, or get a few bags and bring it back to your yards and spread it around the base of all of your trees, and they will love you for it. If you want to create your own compost, it's really easy to do. As someone has said, compost happens. And if you collect your fall leaves and your kitchen scraps, I even clean out my gutters and take the sludge and the grunge from my gutters, because that's a bunch of leaf matter that's already partially broken down. So it's a great addition. It's like a yeast in bread. It's a starter for your compost pile because it's already started to break down. It's already bacteria has started to break down some of the plant material. Throw that into your compost pile. Take your plant clippings. You essentially want a blend of both, both brown and green materials. You want your nice green leaf material, some of your lettuce, some of your kitchen scraps. But then you also want brown material. That is your carbon materials in your yard, some of your dried leaves, pine needles. Put those into the compost mix with an even mixture, and all you need to do is add water and occasionally toss the pile, turn it over from time to time. And as I said, compost happens, and you'll be in about 90 days, a typical 90-day process, you will have, and sometimes even shorter time period in the summer, you'll have what becomes a wonderful a compost material that you can now use either as a planting medium to plant some of your new plants, or you can use it as we were just talking about, as a surface compost mulch over the tops of your trees.
We'll wrap up with our talking points for September right after this, along with Sheila, who wants to talk about plum trees right here at Rosie on the House. A few quick text questions for you here, Mr. Eisenhower. First one's new to the area. Any special care for a Joshua tree that's on our property?
Joshua trees are really bulletproof. There's not a lot of natural pests. They're so well adapted to our desert climates. They're awesome. We have several customers with some really big ones. They do need some trimming from time to time. It takes a little bit of skill to trim them well, because they have so many arms branching off of them that if they're not trimmed carefully, they can look pretty rough. You don't want to leave any stubs. You want to cut those branches back to points of attachment, but do it in a way that leaves the plant looking balanced. But yeah, they're a great tree. Not a lot of maintenance required. Some people like to peel off all the old yellowing leaves that kind of have a beard of below the green ones. But once you start doing that and start to manicure a Joshua tree, you almost are committed to having to do it for the whole tree, which can be a task if it's a large plant. But I would rather just leave them looking natural, leave all the old leaf petioles on the plant, and I think it's a little better for the tree anyway to leave those on.
And is it a good time to plant apple trees and your suggested varieties?
Well, the Dorset and the Anna are the two that do really well here in the valley traditionally, and they're just a really solid choice for any backyard application. But yeah, this is a good time to plant apples from now right through the winter. Some good apple bare root varieties will come online here real soon in the nursery. So kind of keep your eyes and ears open and check with your local nursery for availability. I know Greg Peterson with the Urban Farm has a fruit trees available. And if you go to urbanfarm.org, you will be able to find a wide selection of great trees. He's taking orders now for winter delivery. So get your order in soon, and you'll be able to get those in this winter.
Let's take Sheila real quick. And Mesa wants to talk about a plum tree. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I went on vacation for 9 days, and I came back, and one of my purple leaf plums has about 12 cankers what I'm understanding are cankers. They're bubbles of hard amber sap on the trunk. I have two others that are not next to it. They're in other areas of the yard, but they don't have anything. But I don't see they're on the branches. It just looks like it's around the trunk area. I don't know what to do. I hate to lose it, of course. Do you have any suggestions on can I get rid of it, or is it a done tree or what? So,
does the tree still have its leaves? Is it healthy otherwise?
Yes. Yeah, it looks good. It's got purple, beautiful, lush.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
It got.
Well, a lot of fruit trees, not just the purple leaf plums, have a lot of that oozing. It could be due to sunburn, depending on the exposure of the trunk to the sun. Sometimes just the cracking of the bark due to the sunburn will cause that oozing of some of the sap to break through the little cracks that will form, the splits that will form in the damaged bark. Other times it could be a fungal pathogen that could be a kind of a gamosis, a symptom of a broader problem that's located somewhere else in the tree. Sometimes due to these fungal pathogens that become active in the tree, they'll look for an opportunity to express through a weakness in the bark or an old pruning cut, and we'll see some of that occur as well. But it might be good if you're concerned to call a certified arborist in your area and have them take a closer look. Speaking of which, we have several certified arborists, five certified arborists on staff at Integrity Tree Service, and they're in the field every day diagnosing tree problems. We have a fee-based consulting service that for people who do need us to come out and just take a look around and give them evaluate some tree issues they're facing and discuss management options. And we'd be happy to answer those questions. We've been getting a lot of calls this winter regarding pine trees all over town, and this came up in discussion last month, but we didn't really address it. There is a complex of diseases around the world called decline diseases, and they aren't really attributed to a specific pathogen. But it's a case where trees over a long period of time, maybe up to 10 or 15 years, will decline. And it's a great opportunity to come in and have an expert take a look at some of those issues so we can determine what those causes could be.
iTreeService.com. iTreeService.com. Book your appointment. Coming up next, we've got Attorney General in line about the scam that's happening right now. Stay tuned right here. It's Rosie on the House. Thank you, John Eisenhower.